Frank Kendall, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, has been worried for quite a while about sequestration's disproportionate impact on R&D. And while the budget agreement adds money back to DOD's overall spending capacity in 2014 and 2015, he says the deal doesn't plug the holes in the Pentagon's research funding, which he estimates will experience around a 20% reduction under the Budget Control Act. Speaking at a conference organized by the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, he declined to offer much detail on DOD's forthcoming 2015 budget proposal, but he strongly suggested that while fundamental science and technology research will be protected, applied research directed at producing specific capabilities might not.
If you look at the structure of our R&D accounts, okay, increasingly we're putting money into upgrades of existing equipment. We're protecting our basic technology investments, which total about $10, $11 billion a year, reasonably well. There's a lot of interest from a policy perspective out of the administration to protect basic research. So the 6, 1, 2, and 3 accounts we have in our budget for S&T, basically, are pretty well protected. But they're only about $10 billion out of the $60-plus billion we spent on R&D. If you look at the accounts that are doing our new product development, whether it's technology maturation phase or the engineering manufacturing development phase, those are coming down significantly. They came down significantly when we looked at our last budget, and I think you will see more of the same, you know, as we look at lower budget numbers going into the future.
Kendall says that's worrisome and could seriously crimp the Defense Department's pipeline for new military hardware.
In general, when my program executive officers come in, the people who manage portfolios of acquisition programs, their portfolios tend to all look the same. There are a number of products that are fielded, that are in sustainment, maybe in some kind of an upgrade program. There are a few products that are kind of back at the beginning of the process where you don't have to spend very much money, you can start things. And there aren't many things in that middle phase where you're doing the serious and expensive development to get products into the field, into the hands of the warfighters. That's the part of the budget that I'm most concerned about. And given that long lead time, having a hole there is not a good thing.
Not a good thing, Kendall argues, because missed opportunities on research and development can't be recovered. That's distinct from the other ill effects of sequestration, he says. For example, military leaders have been warning for 2 years that the training cutback sequestration forced would cause a hollow force.
You can cover readiness relatively quickly. You can buy the parts, you can train the people. You can recover modernization on the production side of the house with the lead time associated with whatever item you're producing. So if it's airplanes, say, a couple of years, if it's ships, say, 3 or 4 or 5 years, depending on the ship. Other commodities kind of fall somewhere in the middle of all that. But if you give up R&D, if you don't do the technology work, you don't get that time back. Okay, that is something that is really gone.
Kendall says the Pentagon has begun to take some steps internally to reallocate funding from the procurement of weapon systems to R&D for future systems. But he says the budget constraints on all of DOD's modernization accounts make it difficult to do very much of that. So to hedge against the risk of losing the Defense Industrial Base's engineering capabilities, he says the department needs to take additional measures, as it did back in the 1970s. At that time, William Perry, who went on to serve as Secretary of Defense under Bill Clinton, was in charge of defense research and engineering.
He consciously invested in a number of programs, in R&D for a number of programs that he knew, looking forward to the budgets that were certainly prevailing at that time and that he could anticipate, that the department could not afford to put into production in any quantities. A lot of our force today rests on those investments. And what happened, of course, was after the 70s, we had a big military buildup and a big increase in defense spending in the 80s. And what we did in the 80s was we did procurement of the things that Bill Perry had kept in R&D. And the list is going to be familiar. It's things like the Abrams, the Bradley, the Apache, the Patriot, you know, F-15, F-16, F-14, et cetera, F-18, et cetera, Aegis destroyers. Bill did the same thing in the early 90s after the Cold War ended, when he was Secretary of Defense, and he kept investments going in things like the F-22 and the Seawolf submarine. And in that case, we didn't field as many systems. Submarine, Seawolf case, very small number. In the F-22 case, you know, a small fraction of the original inventory objective. So we have a relatively small F-22 force, but we do have some in the inventory, and they're very capable.
Kendall says it might be time to return to that kind of approach, directing R&D money to systems the Pentagon knows it can't afford to buy in big quantities right away, and to prevent the overall research and development enterprise from dwindling.
It moves us forward technically, so you're addressing that time issue that I talked about earlier, the time you can't get back. It keeps our industrial base healthy from the design perspective. It keeps design teams together And I believe firmly that you need continuity in design efforts. You know, an awful lot of the information engineers have that they bring to their practice every day is in their heads. And they get that information from experience. They get it from having tried things and done them and learned from other people who have done the same. There's a need for some continuity there. And there's also a need for a significant kind of a critical mass of effort where you actually are building things to sustain the kind of capabilities that we're talking about, to give people both the knowledge and the confidence that they can go do new things that have never been done before. So doing prototyping is a way to preserve that aspect of the industrial base, which I think is central.
Kendall says a good deal of his hand-wringing over research and development comes from the daily intelligence briefings he gets, which point to an opposite pattern in Russia and China, both of whom are boosting their overall defense spending, even if those nations' military budgets are a long way from being at parity with the U.S.
China is modernizing in a very strategic and focused way. It is fielding systems that directly challenge our capabilities, the types of capabilities that the U.S. relies on. I do not anticipate us having a major conflict with China. There are many, many, many reasons why that would be bad for both powers. But on the other hand, I do see a China that is a growing power and that is increasingly assertive, at least in the region, if not globally. So there is, first of all, a possibility of a mistake, of a miscalculation. In addition to that, there is the chance that there's the high probability that whatever China or Russia or other powers make will be exported. And it will get into the hands of those technologies, will get into the hands of people we have a higher likelihood of possibly having a conflict with.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.